This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
We will have more NCAA tournament on TV as well. Man who's now the voice of the NCAA tournament, Ian Eagle, CBS Sports. He joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Ian, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, guys. How we doing?
We're doing wonderful. What's the difference in your tone of voice? Is there any tone of voice? Is there any difference in how you call a basketball game than a football game?
Yeah, I think there is. I just think there's constant crowd noise that is part of a basketball game in a smaller space. So you're cutting through that. Your energy level is probably sustained because of that. And football, it's more bursts of energy. And obviously football is probably the perfect TV sport. So it's call to play, get out, show the replay, let people catch their breath, and then ramp it up again. So you're shifting gears probably a bit more in football, whereas in basketball you're hitting a certain octave level and you're staying there.
Ian, obviously you had a front row seat at, you know, maybe the best player in college hoops over the weekend. Yep. With Cooper Flagg. You also got a front row seat at one of the most annoying voices and faces now in college basketball, Danny Hurley. And the way that things kind of unfolded at the end of the game, you as a broadcaster, I know you don't want to dwell on any one thing. You certainly don't want one team's fan base to think you're being unfair. But how do you avoid, how do you ignore something when it becomes the story, which his antics throughout the game certainly did?
Well, I could tell you from my perspective, the job is to call the game. So you've got to lock in on what's happening and the intricacies of what's going on in front of you. The things that are happening on the periphery are important. And if we show them on the air, you have to certainly refer to them. But it's never going to take over what the main job is, and that's to call play-by-play. It never got to the point, at least from my chair, that Dan Hurley became my focal point. My focal point was a tight game with a number one seed on the ropes and the two-time defending champions trying to keep their magical run alive. Everything else was extraneous and was ancillary as far as I was concerned. Now, you know, whatever happened afterwards in the hallway with a phone, and you know, that's not part of the game coverage. That's something that took off on its own and social media, and I understand why. It is something that can be polarizing, and I, on a personal level, have dealt with Dan now for a number of years. He's great to talk to. He's a basketball savant. He explains it really well. He's funny and likable and a little unique and different. And I recognize that's 15 minutes at a practice or 15 minutes day of game that other people don't have access to. I can only articulate what my relationship is and our relationship as a group, and then the things that he says that actually are worthwhile mentioning on the air. The other stuff, that's him. It's part of his personality. Obviously, you're not a fan. The camera loves him. There's no doubt about it. The facial reactions are real and different, and you're going to get something, and that's probably why you see him featured as much as he is over the course of a college basketball season, because it isn't normal and it isn't run-of-the-mill by any stretch.
I have to say, we actually love him. I know that might surprise you the way I led into that question, because we think that he's great in that it gets rivalries going. It certainly gets passions inflamed. I mean, you have his SID threatening to ruin a reporter just for sharing a video that went viral. By the way, have you ever had a sports information director threaten to ruin your life, Ian?
Not that I can recall. I'm trying to think back. The 99 NCAA tournament, I was in Sacramento. No, nothing happened.
I was actually reprimanded for a sporting event I was not actually attending once by a PR guy in this town.
So how did that happen?
I was in college, and there were two people who used a credential to go to one of the teams that I'm not going to mention.
Whoa.
And apparently one of them walked in a room that they were not supposed to walk into, and I was the sports director of my college radio station, and I had a very nasty email that I still have to this day.
Yeah, it's a keeper. Yeah, you keep those just to remind yourself and to stay humble. I think the passion that you talked about is real. Your lead into the question certainly did not make me think you were a huge fan. Anthony, I may have to go back and see if we can get the actual words that were used, because it made it feel like you were not a Hurley guy.
It's a bait and switch, Ian. It's one of the trademark moves. A little bit.
Yeah, you wanted me to rip, and then when I didn't rip, you're like, oh, no, I like him too. You know, we're all fans.
Yeah, why not? Ian Eagle, join us right now from CBS Sports. There is a graphic making the rounds right now on social media where it has all the different players that are left in the Sweet 16s, at least the starting fives, and the schools they started at, the meandering journey. So it's leading a lot of people to question the state of affairs in college hoops, the state of the game. Ian, have you seen any kind of a drop-off? Do you think the game is any worse? You've mentioned different to describe Hurley. Would you mention different and still really good to describe the state of college hoops?
Yeah, I think there's always this double-edged sword when it comes to the NCAA tournament. We love upsets. We love double-digit seeds that shock the world in the early rounds. And then we don't necessarily like it when those same schools get crushed. In the second round, they lose by 28, and we say, well, what happened here? This isn't good. So it's a little bit damned if you do, damned if you don't. This particular year, we're not seeing the mid-majors get it done. We had a couple of teams that played well and represented themselves well, but in the end, you're looking at mostly chalk now for the Sweet 16, which, by the way, could lead to highly competitive games, memorable games. And then that will be the shifting narrative of the 2025 NCAA tournament. Oh, the games are great, and they were nail biters, and now here we go. We're on a collision course for potentially four great teams in San Antonio. If you're asking me if things are different, yes, they definitely are. There is a clear change in the mid-majors. Teams that had built some chemistry, had built some cohesion, maybe snuck up on people. You don't sneak up on anybody anymore, because odds are if you have a really good player at a mid-major, they're gone. There's somebody else scouting them. There's somebody in their DMs. There's somebody that's ready to pounce with some NIL money, and you don't get to develop a Loyola of Chicago or a team of that nature that goes to a Final Four just based on the group that they had, the group that grew up and developed together. So to say that's it, this is the way it's going to be forever, I don't know that. I know that this is the first year that you could really feel the effects of the NIL combined with the transfer portal. And it's showing and revealing itself in the form of the NCAA tournament. Does it mean that the games aren't good, that the excitement level? No, the interest is still very high going into these games. There's a lot of anticipation, but it didn't feel exactly like it's felt in previous years. So we'll see if this is the moment it changed or if there's an overcorrection at some point and teams now try to become a little bit more responsible with how they use their money.
What's your favorite tournament moment for you personally?
On a personal level, I did the world feed for 2010, which was Duke and Butler, and I don't know if there's going to be a game that ever matches that based on storyline and finish. The fact that Hayward had a chance to win it at the buzzer for the local team, the little team that could, against Duke, the ultimate blue blood, and it bangs off the rim on a half-court shot, and Duke ends up winning the national championship. That one was pretty hard to top. I've had just personal ones through the years where games took on a life of their own, a Wake Forest-West Virginia game, ironically, in Cleveland, where Kevin Pitsnoggle just made shot after shot. Mike Gansey, who's the current GM of the Cavaliers, made a bunch of big shots. They knocked off Chris Paul and the Wake Forest Demon Deacons in double overtime, a team that very easily could have gone to the Final Four and maybe vied for a national championship, and John Beilein and the West Virginia Mountaineers went to the Sweet 16. There are just games and moments that stick with me. It's 28 years of working this event now for CBS, which is hard to wrap my brain around as well. Started in 1998 and vividly remember flying out to the West Coast and having no idea how to prepare, how to compartmentalize my brain. I had Maryland, Illinois State, Nichols State. I had Utah State. I had Arizona. I had no clue. I just showed up and hoped for the best.
All right, Ian, we know that you were just finishing up an interview in Boston, so yes. We're not going to compare and contrast or anything like that to try to get you in trouble. But did you say anything to them about the Cavs and Celtics in a potential Eastern Conference Finals?
It didn't come up. I have a radio interview coming up in Altoona. I hope that you guys will monitor that one.
I stayed at a hotel in Altoona, and they didn't clean the room the first night I stayed.
No,
it was very weird. It was very
weird. Everybody kind of knows that. You know, in Altoona, they don't do the housekeeping.
They started yelling at each other right in front of me. I was like, just clean the room. I'm gonna go over here to this restaurant. They had a King's restaurant across the street. It was delightful.
Yeah, that's awkward. That's an awkward situation when you and the housekeeping staff can't seem to get on the same page.
No,
nothing came up with Cavs and Celtics. I think everybody was focused on the college hoops, and then at some point we're going to turn the page and get into the nitty-gritty of the NBA playoffs. I feel like I'm going to be on with you again at some point. There's a pretty good chance.
I mean, eventually NFL season will be here, and we might have a new quarterback, so.
You might?
Do you know something we don't know, Ian?
Whoa.
No, I know nothing. I thought that was an interesting hedge. I mean, you're going to have a new quarterback, and we just don't know who it is, correct?
Yeah, but I was kind of hoping you'd give us a name because we're kind of out here just taking wild swings here.
No. You're right. I know. I just can't share. I'm sorry.
That's true. Kenny Atkinson, I mean, you've known the man.
Yeah, great dude.
What is the change? Do you notice any change between him and the type of guy he was in Brooklyn to what he is now?
Yeah, I think even by his own admission, he has figured out some of the dynamic of dealing with stars and the day-to-day job of not just being someone that knows what they're doing, because he always knew what he was doing. That was never the issue. It's how you articulate it to your players and how you then see the big picture of what the goal is. Player development was always his thing. It still is. And that's what's always struck me. There's not a player out there that doesn't want to get better. So whether or not they want to admit it, they deep down know by getting better, it helps them. It makes them obviously a bigger part of the team. It gets them a bigger contract down the road. You're part of a winning culture. All of that was true, and that's been something that he preached from day one. But it's really taken hold. I just think his experience with Golden State and L.A., winning a championship for the Warriors, and by his own admission, watching Steve Kerr, watching how he interacts with his players and how he handles the job on a day-to-day basis, made him better. It just did. And sometimes the right situation for the right coach fits like a glove. And to me, this has been the perfect marriage. This is what this team needed at this point, and this is what Kenny Atkinson needed as a head coach at this point in his career.
So Donovan Mitchell's been struggling the last 2 months, but if all that gets righted come playoff time and the Cavs make a very deep run and Donovan does what he's done to the Celtics, mm-hmm. which has been a lot of dominating performances over the course of his career against Boston, how do you think we'll be talking about Donovan Mitchell? And do you think there's been a level of disrespect towards the Cavs star?
I think he's gotten more respect, believe it or not, this year because he's done it in a different way. It doesn't have to be all him. He's been part of the buy-in from day one. His numbers may not necessarily be what they had been previously, but everybody is getting a piece of the pie. And I think that bodes well for him and his reputation as one of the best players in the game. The problem, as you know, is taking down the defending champion is no small task. They have that experience. They have a real formula of how to do this because they've done it. And to me, that's going to be the number one question in the Eastern Conference playoffs is, Cleveland can clearly play with Boston. They can beat Boston. They've done it. They've done it in shocking fashion, as we know, the come-from-behind victory. Can they do it 4 out of 7 games? Can they do it with everything on the line? The grueling part of the playoffs where your legacy can be cemented. You know, that's what we're talking about here. This is where Donovan Mitchell is at in his career. It's no longer a question. Is he an all-star? Is he someone you can build around? Is he an alpha? He's all those things. Is he a champion? Is he worthy of that next category in the NBA? That's going to be the huge question going into the playoffs, and Cleveland is the team that everybody has earmarked as the one that could actually do it and then use that as a stepping stone to a championship.
Ian, we thank you very much for the time. We know it's a busy morning for you, so and you know we always love it when you come on. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again hopefully soon.
Yep. Appreciate it. I'm going to do a Sports Radio Altoona and then make my move to maybe Yuma, Sports Radio Yuma.
Outstanding. Tell them all I said hi.
I will. I'm going to let them know. Yep.
Thank you. Ian Eagle, CBS Sports on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Cleveland money, it's just as good as New York money. In this case, in the NFL. It seems like the afternoon show has been picking fights with us a lot lately. Is that not true?
People have been texting me about it. When I ever listen,
well, at least they're listening. I'm glad they're listening.
Yeah, whenever I tune in, I'm hearing good sports jawboning. You know, I love that. What?
Good sports jawboning.
They have that. Yeah. Reed, that's the most sports jawboning in the CLE.
Yeah, per capita.
Yesterday, I got this. Like they're talking about the football stuff. I go, guys, I made a joke on Saturday. I had to pick up a whole bunch of old football helmets. I was like, real football guys drive around with old football helmets in the back of their truck in March. I got to get rid of them things. But I usually it seems that, and it's I think it's all in good nature. I think people want us to take it personally because they like that stuff. But I have a good nature about it. I do got kind of something to bring up about the midday show, though. Not uh-oh. Personal. Not personal at all. Not being mean. I disagree with what somebody said on the midday show. Because I just don't find it to be applicable here. This is Andy and Jeff. The talking heads. They's a talking. They're jawboning. About Shedeur Sanders. And that rumor yesterday that Deion has refuted that he would like his son to go to New York.
If Shedeur and maybe Deion are looking for Shadur to enter the upper echelon of marketability.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the NFL, two things have to happen. You have to play well, and you have to be in the right market.
His last name is Sanders. It's just like LeBron playing in Cleveland. It's not going to matter.
No, I'm not going to put. I'm not putting Shadur or Deion in the LeBron category they are not there. It's this, though,
it's
Andy.
It's Sanders. It's Deion Sanders' kid. He's going to get commercials. He's going to get all those things already.
And if he gets them in New York, he'll get four times as many and make four times as much.
Is that true to you? Because I took umbrage. I disagreed. I didn't take umbrage, but I disagreed with him.
Boy, that's always been the conventional wisdom, is that the athletes can make more money on endorsements because they're not only, if you're in New York, are you instantly, you know, going to get talked about more on the debate shows, and for good and for worse, and for the last how many years it's been for bad. It hasn't been. I bet a lot of guys were like, man, I wish we weren't in New York. We wouldn't get half the scrutiny that we would have gotten if we were somewhere else. Like Sam Darnold, if he would have failed in like, say, Carolina, would he have been made fun of anywhere near the way that he does on their platforms?
No.
But when it does, if you're good in New York, you can have three good weeks in New York and it changes everything.
Jeremy Lin.
Just ask Jeremy Lin, right?
Yep. Sorry.
Like, no, that's
Tommy
exactly
DeVito.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. His agent. Like, his agent gets more run now. So it is true that if you go on any kind of a run there, you can have legendary status. But as far as, like, I guess maybe local money, there is more local money, obviously, in New York City.
Well, yeah, but I would look at it, though. I go, man, I just don't think it works in the end. I don't think that argument holds water in the NFL.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City.
Yes, I think if you're that good... Josh Allen plays in Buffalo. Josh Allen is a highly recognizable man and would probably be recognized in all corners of the United States. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes. Same thing with a lot of NFL football players, guys who wear helmets, guys, quarterbacks. And I feel that Shadur Sanders would be the same way playing in Cleveland. I mean, Baker Mayfield had big progressive commercials right there. That wasn't our stadium, right? That was someone else's. Either way, it was supposed to be based in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken. So he had big national commercial ads running as a member of the Cleveland Browns. Wasn't Alice Cooper his neighbor in one of them, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. So he's had big national things. I think in the NBA, I think that argument is starting to go off a little bit, but the Knicks have been good. Have they been dominant? No. Maybe that would change. I'll say that. Baseball, I think, is the only one where it really holds. I really think that's the only one. And because we have Jose Ramirez. He's one of the best all-around baseball players in Major League Baseball. And I think that we're getting to a point here where we're right at his prime, and I don't think that we'll ever get to truly enjoy it as an MVP or anything like that, even if he deserves it, because he doesn't play in New York. He doesn't play for the Mets. He doesn't play for the Yankees. And frankly, he doesn't play for the Dodgers, if you want to go throw that one out there. Angels are a different animal, it seems. But those three teams, those markets, I think it's just totally different in baseball. That's the only one where I think it counts. I think in football, if you're that good, you can't hide in the NFL. You have the most exposure of anybody else. Travis Kelce, she could have just ignored him. Taylor Swift could have just ignored him wholeheartedly off of what? A sentence that he said? He's like, well, didn't he say, like, I want to see what's up with Taylor Swift when she got...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he said it on a podcast. And the podcast was popular with football people, with Kansas City fans and Eagles fans and people like football. Now it's taken on a life of its own. I mean, he's a big national celebrity. He's a tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. And you could be, in the football world, a big national celebrity as tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, but you take a new light. Rob Gronkowski, was a tight end for the New England Patriots. Things change when you get to the exalted level of the NFL. And I think that doesn't matter whatever market you're in. Whatever. It doesn't matter to me with the NFL. So I understand what he's saying. And yeah, maybe you would have more money because it costs more money in local deals in New York City. But I think nationally, Cleveland, Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon, for that matter, doesn't mean much. Let me get to the phones. Jim in Strongsville. Hello.
Hey, guys. Listen, I heard this argument yesterday, and it's really easy to put to bed. Listen, you had two quarterbacks, both named Manning, one playing in New York, one playing in Indianapolis. Both won Super Bowls. Which one's the more marketable brother?
Peyton.
And what? He's in Indianapolis. How can he be the more marketable one?
Very
He's not
good
playing
point.
In the big market.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
I mean,
you want to talk about something that's on as even terms as you can put him on? That's it right there. Take a look at it and boom. Sorry, Jeff. Go back to watching Andy Griffith.
Now, hey, hold. Hey, he's not here to defend himself, heck? Jim.
Ooh, tough acting tonight.
Gee golly.
Judas Priest. It's not. Do you have something you had to get off your chest?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it probably helped that Peyton Manning was better. Like,
he had all those MVPs.
Yeah, it's pretty good player.
Leaders,
that helps, yeah. too. But just as far as, like, hype and stuff, you know, I think Shador on his own has built up enough. He's generated enough interest in who he is. That's why, I mean, when Albert Breer comes on and says, I could see him slipping to the second round, like, that's outrageous because of who it is. Like, it's crazy to think about him in the green room, Shador.
Yeah.
Teams passing up on him, and then they're going to show Deion.
I think he's going to
They're going to show Deion probably more than Shador.
Isn't he not going? I thought he wasn't going.
I don't know.
Well, wherever he is, right?
Yeah, like, there's
going to be cameras.
There is a segment of fans who recognize his father, but do not see his father as the reason why he's there. And it's the younger generation who did not grow up wearing Deion shoes. And
they don't know how cool he was.
Right.
They have no idea that he was the one athlete that everybody, by the way, white and black, like everybody that was playing sports and good at sports. Yeah, Deion was polarizing to, you know, probably middle America and the middle-aged, you know, fans. Like, yeah, he was polarizing because we hadn't seen somebody that was like, don't tell me what I can't do. Don't tell me what I can't say. He paved the way. He was as influential as it gets. That doesn't mean anything to kids now.
He's always, right. I think you're right, and I think that's hard to deal with because there's so many times where loudmouths, and Shador is not I know I said that term earlier and somebody took umbrage with it. No, does Shador yell and scream like Brian Bosworth? No. But he is a guy who does the wrists up. There's Rolexes, there's music, there's things like that. There's flashiness.
But we've seen that already in the league.
But our generation got used to the idea of guys being flashy and then falling flat on their face. I mean, Brian Bosworth, he's great in the Dr. Pepper commercials, fair actor, but his NFL career, for a million different reasons, a myriad of reasons, a failure, and a lot of people just didn't like him at the time and wanted to see him fail. Like, you want to see those guys fail. Deion, when has Deion failed? In his entire football media career, he's never really failed. And he's a guy who wore
maybe
the big chains.
A high school that he tried to start. But yeah, I get your point. And sports-related stuff, he has
been... Wow, that was a deep pull.
But no,
never mind.
He, you're right, though. You're right,
one high school, okay? One little high school. But he wore the big chains, wore the sunglasses, said he was going to play both sports. They didn't want him to play both sports. He's always come out on the other side, smell like roses. He really always has. And I think that's bothered some people. But to that generation, to my kids' generation and stuff like that, Shador Sanders, there will be other Shador Sanders. That's normal.
And we've had flashy QBs. I mean, Cam Newton was extremely flashy. Was not the way he played. Like, the way he played, he was kind of bruising and whatever. But him as a electrifying personality... I mean, he exudes it still to this day. Look at how he shows up on
some of the stuff. I know that he says some controversial things, but I still, that podcast he has, it's like, this is some good stuff. Sorry.
By the way, do you remember Tim McCarver and Deion?
Throwing the water bottle at him.
I mean, it's
the jug of water at him.
It's an all-time moment. It's an all-time moment in just media, sports.
And when we were kids, and I know you guys are, you're 4 years older than me, you're 5 years older than me. My generation of kids that I was that age, we all loved him, and all our dads rolled their eyes.
Yeah.
They all rolled their eyes. All our coaches, when we played for the B-League Dolphins in Perry Township, you guys are going to wear those bandanas, okay, fine. Yeah, okay, they all love Deion. The Browns aren't here, so they got to love somebody. Fine. Like, that's the way it was. And I think that I've gotten used to it over time. I just don't think it's no big deal to – people who are younger than us. It's not a big deal. And I think that that's one of the big, big differences in generations that we've had here between these two.
Kenny, are you feeling good again? Closing the West Coast trip. Didn't even need Donovan Mitchell last night. How many times do we see in the NBA when it's the last leg of a trip? Guys just want to get home. Kenny, their own beds.
I felt good.
Their own beds. Not like in Altoona, where you don't even know if the beds are going to be made.
I hate hotel beds. And I think it's because we have a big bed in our house. I'm sorry. I'm off the beaten path there. Just let me say, I think my bed might be too soft.
I'm just going to let Ken cook here.
Mine might be too soft. I'm sorry. Go right on ahead. The vibes.
First, his truck was too nice. Now his bed's too
soft. The vibes on this segment are not very good.
I've seen people talk about having circulation issues because the bedding is draped so tight against your legs. I could see that being an issue for some. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Cavs 122-111 last night, and they were able to shoot the ball finally. 44% from three. They closed it out. Darius with, again, the beautiful floaters. He had a steady diet of those. He was getting past the wing defenders and finishing over and around the big men. So it was nice. It was nice to get up back on track. So it seems like, Kenny, the four-game losing streak, that seems like years ago, right?
Yeah.
Well, now get ready because they're starting to hype things up again, which is making us feel a little bit better about things. Listen to Darius Garland talking about the team and Mobley, and then you'll listen to Evan Mobley talking about the team and Darius Garland.
I mean, he's our defensive player of the year. He's the lead defensive player of the year. Our 2-7-footers always hold it down for us. They're our anchors. They do everything for us, literally, on both sides of the ball, so it doesn't go unnoticed. We definitely love him.
I mean, that's our clutch player of the year. He took over at the end of the game like he always does and just did what he did out there.
So one saying, hey, he's a defensive player of the year. The other, he's
listen
the clutchest
to these guys.
Player. Guys.
Listen to these fixed. Guys.
That's from FanDuel Sports.
FanDuel Sports, is that all fixed? Is everything fixed? You know what I will say?
Well, they always got along to go with each other. Yeah. They're a very likable group of men. They are very likable.
I never really heard them down in the dumps. You know, even throughout those losses, it kind of seemed like Kenny wasn't really getting hard on them. Like, we wondered how they were going to deal.
It's the lost West Coast week. You can do it then.
It's true.
You can be out there and you can be down in the dumps because you don't do the post game until 1 o'clock back here, and that's when it happens.
It was
very rarely.
It was much needed.
Do we ever have to rip them for anything?
I can guarantee you, had they have lost one of these games or both of these games, you know, and again, they're not the greatest teams, although Portland has been weird this year. They've gone on some nice stretches for a team that's not going to make the playoffs. But you're better than them, and you showed it last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, did I think we saw the Cavs' best effort at any point? Maybe the second half against Utah. That is about the only time, maybe the third quarter last night too, but it's about it. We did not see the Cavs play their basketball. And again, they're resting guys. Mitchell was out yesterday. You saw Darius out. Now, they're not giving us any big reasons to be concerned about a groin injury for Donovan, but it is something to keep your eye on.
Like, yes.
We need him. I'm not worried about going after the franchise record. They'd have to be 9-1. Who cares? I know Justin Termini made it sound like earlier in the show that we squandered our opportunity for the number one seed in the finals.
I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't understand where Justin was going with that because you caught him on it, and then he immediately went the other way. Like, I wondered if he kind of knew how silly it kind of sounded there for a minute and then immediately changed his tune and was like, I'm not necessarily saying that. Justin knows a lot about basketball. I shouldn't give him that credit because he always rips me every chance he gets. But I think you're right about this. To have Donovan there, I thought that the Utah game, I thought that was a perfect get-right slump buster game, and then we could kind of all relax a little bit. But I think that these final 10 games that you have now, it just sets up to make any of the negatives, whatever negatives there are out there, people calling out the negatives, I think it just sets it up to make those folks louder. I think that's all that does. Because I look at all these games, there's plenty of good reasons to make sure Donovan is healthy for the postseason. There's plenty of good reasons to do the same with Darius. There's plenty of reasons to kind of put the thing, I hate to say it, on autopilot. And you might want to have a flip the switch moment over the next 10 games. Folks, I get that. Maybe you get that against Indiana. But, man, I got to get ready for the postseason.
I don't think you're going to see it at all. Think about it. They're playing the Knicks, and most likely Brunson is probably not going to be able to play in that game because they're just trying to get him healthy. You do have those two games in the last three against Indiana.
Yeah. So
There's going to be, there might be some jockeying for position from Indiana's standpoint.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the only thing I can get to, and that's the only thing, because I'm trying, what I am trying to do is trying to knock down every argument against the Cavs. The one argument that I could see against the Cavs about winning and about being a viable championship basketball team, one of the arguments that I'm trying to knock down is that they aren't postseason ready. Well, if they go out and they beat Orlando, or they beat, and they beat maybe Detroit in round two. I thought you made a great point earlier today about that. Here we are. You and I are complimenting each other like Evan Mobley and Darius Garland are. It's amazing. Too much. It's too much. If they go out there and they beat their first and second round opponents, why, I can't say they weren't ready for the postseason if they go out and they lose to Boston. So I'm not trying to set myself up for disappointment. They're not disappointments. I'd be disappointed in the results, but there's only so much you can do. And as of right now, and maybe we'll be proven different later, I think that Kenny Atkinson is pushing the right buttons on who to rest, when to rest him, how long to rest him. Because there's, you got to have him available so you can be ready for the postseason. You have to have them at your usage. And if you don't have them, you don't have them. You got to keep them healthy. So that's where I stand on that.
Are you getting excited about the prospects of seeing J.B. Bickerstaff in potentially the second round?
Yes. I'm tired of the... Because I want to see, I'm tired of the narrative about the softness. I can't fight it, not yet, don't know yet, but I'm tired of that narrative, tired of talking about it. Tired, it's an ugly thing to be called. Being called soft is ugly. There's only so much that you can say on the behalf of the Orlando Magic or the Atlanta Hawks. If you get to Detroit, or if Detroit is your second-round opponent, they're going to be really excited because they've, to me, I think they've skipped a step. They've gone from just making the postseason to winning a round in the playoffs. Now you're going to catch a very high and mighty, smelling themselves, Detroit team. It's Cleveland. It's Detroit. There's history there. If you're old enough to remember, you guys are. And it's also JB. And I want to see what JB does. It is the matchup. I'm not going to say Brugel and the Pistons because I know I get myself in trouble. But if we're talking about energetic, emotional matchups, you can't beat that. Your former coach, leading a team that you've had history with, that's poetry. I'm looking forward to that. Hey, if you lose that, I'm going to lose my mind. It ain't going to be on me.
No, that's not even an option.
Ain't going to be on me.
You cannot lose that
series. But this is because you know he's going to attack you. He knows where to attack you. He knows where to go. Now, I don't know if he has the horses to attack, but he's going to know where to go.
Just imagine a playoff run of first-round Magic. Get a sweep there. Avenge the seven game. Second round, Detroit. Finals, conference finals, Boston, and NBA finals. You know who?
I want to
LeBron James and the Lakers.
Well, I thought you were going to say Sengun and the Houston Rockets.
If we're talking movies, that's a situation where like Rocky 3 was better than Rocky 1 and 2.
Wow.
Yeah, I said it.
Wow.
Said it. Those situations. Okay, be sarcastic a little bit more. I'll tell you what, J.B. Bickerstaff, whoever's in the paint for them, they're going to say, remember who wouldn't take the shot last year?
Why don't you poke him in the ribs there?
Remember who wouldn't take the shot last year? Now all of a sudden we're getting emotional and excited. And I'm an excitable boy.